Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast based around the principles of our non-distressed auction model and Australian real estate concepts at work today in the US marketplace. We focus on scripts, dialogues, real situations in negotiation, listing appointments, prospecting, and all concepts to do with real estate. We look forward to being real and rethinking real estate with you. Hi there, folks, and welcome back to another episode of Rethink Real Estate. And today I've got a celebrity guest with me, Mr. Wesley Williams from our Harcourts Prime Property Newport Beach office. He's one of our owners there now and certainly one of our marquee agents within our organisation being Harcourts, not only in the Pacific being California, Nevada and Hawaii, but also Harcourts North America, as he's been one of our clear trailblazers when it comes to the auction process. Wesley, how are you doing today, mate?
Good, thank you, bud.
That's good, mate. Now, you might notice that Wesley's in the car. I believe you're coming back from Big Bear. Probably another appointment up there, mate. What were you doing up in Big Bear?
Yeah, just another listing appointment from a past client.
So, oh, beautiful. Good deal. Do you tend to do appointments everywhere, mate? Like, do you tend to focus on a particular area, or you're happy to go there if it's a past client? Run me through that.
Ideally, I'd rather stay in Newport close to home and... you know, price points are a lot higher, but you know, I'll go wherever the business is, because you never know where that next transaction is going to turn into. So these guys that I was with were a past client that I sold a house in Anaheim Hills, which he listed it locally with a local Big Bear agent, and decided after 6 months, no offers, no nothing. So he said, now it's time to call in Wesley again. So He reached out to me and said, hey, would you come up? So I've just come back down from there. And I sold his house in Anaheim Hills via auction, and this one's another auction.
Wonderful, mate. Now, let's lead in with that, because, you know, auction's certainly been something that, mate, I think that we can accredit a lot of our success that we've had with auction. You've kind of been a really good foundation for us to build off in the US, because you and I have known each other now for 4 years, and you know, we've been doing auctions here in the States now just over five. And so when you and I first met, and when you first got into real estate and sort of first joined the business, you know, we were still finding our feet, so to speak, as an organization using the auction process. And certainly there were a lot of learnings that we had from you running the process, because you were somebody that didn't have any experience in real estate and sort of got into the business. And you were kind of our first person that got into the business not knowing what auction was, and just used it at like kind of an excuse the expression, mate, because naive is certainly something you're not. But at that time you were naive, and you just did what you thought was right in real estate from day one, which was auction. Give us a bit of background on what you did before then and sort of your introduction into real estate and how auction played a key role in that.
So before real estate, I played soccer, coached soccer, and like coached, you know, club soccer, college, high school. And that's how I met Kevin. I was coaching his son. Kevin kind of gave me an opportunity to go get my license, which is what I did. Whether he knew I was going to be successful or not, we didn't know.
Well, mate, not to interrupt, I want to make sure that the listeners understand that you're being modest, in the sense that you weren't only a coach, you obviously played pretty high league, not only over in Europe, in the UK, you also played here for the Galaxy, didn't you?
No, not with the Galaxy. I spent some time with the Blues, Wilmington Hammers, for a time in Dallas.
Okay.
Played with the Galaxy 2 for a little bit.
Oh, okay, right.
So that was like kind of prior to meeting Kevin, and then still trying to coach and juggle real estate at the same time, which wasn't easy. One thing had to give, and real estate just made the most sense with the most, most potential of, you know, higher earnings plus more flexible schedule and so on. So I jumped into real estate, not knowing anything, and not knowing any other brokerage. Harcourts was my first brokerage, but kind of just listening to what Kevin told me and following Kevin as a mentor, and then, you know, Kevin pushing auction, and then meeting yourself, and then understanding, you know, really what an impact auction had and what an opportunity it gave me, being a brand new agent trying to compete with everybody else that's way more seasoned, that also knows the area, because I wasn't, you know, I haven't lived here all that long either. So,
well, mate, let's talk about that.
I stood out.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the way that you stand out in a listing presentation, because now you've got the Wesley Williams group behind you, and you've certainly got fantastic branding, and you've got, mate, your list of results is as long as anyone's arm. You know, like it's an incredible list of results, certainly within that Newport Beach kind of Dover Shores, Corona Del Mar, you know, all of those great local areas. But mate, I know a different Wesley Williams than most people know, is that, you know, I remember that time where you were going out to Temecula and all of those different places. And obviously we've got you on the phone coming back from Big Bear for a past client that needs help dealing with a tough property. But mate, there was a time where you obviously needed to differentiate yourself. And how did Auction help you do that?
It just gave me, a reason to talk to people, for people to listen to me, because I was offering them something different than what they were hearing from every other realtor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I didn't have a lot of experience, you know, I didn't have the confidence either to go and list, you know, $3-5 million properties. But I had, so I just went wherever anybody was willing to listen to me, whether it was Temecula, Murrieta, Escondido in San Diego,
yep,
Encinitas, San Diego, whether Anaheim Hills, Orange, wherever it was, I would go. And I think the first house I sold was for, and it was $420,000, and then, you know, I was selling stuff in Temecula and Murrieta at $310,000.
Mate, just to sort of digress a tiny bit, I still remember one of the craziest listing appointments that I've ever been on in my life was with you. Remember when we drove down to Del Mar to have coffee at the Starbucks to the guy, then he took us back to his house that overlooked the freeway out to the ocean, and he was telling us about the underground shelter or bomb shelter that he had in Russia or somewhere that he had it, and he was selling like plots in there for millions of dollars for like the Armageddon or whatever it may be. It had its own private landing strip and all those type of things. Remember that appointment?
Yeah, I do. No, I actually saw a documentary on that, let's tell you, on TV, like probably 3 or 4 months ago. It was on there. It's A&E, like, talking about his bunkers and showing it. How
that's
he,
it.
You know, I think he sold most of one of them, and he had another one that he just started.
Yeah, that was the name of it. It was a bunker. I keep remembering he kept saying bunker, and you and I were in the car together driving back up from San Diego going, we just didn't know whether he was real or not, and then all of a sudden all this publicity came out about him and everything like that. No, it was an interesting time. But, mate, there's clearly one thing that stands out with yourself is that I explain you like a bulldog to people, is that I remember when working with you when I was the director of auctions, is that, you know, if you couldn't get a hold of me, not only would you call me once, you'd call me twice, and then you'd send me a text message, hey, mate, give me a call. If you hadn't heard from me in 5 minutes, you'd call me again. And, you know, most people would get upset at that, but it never really bothered you reaching out to people and continuing to follow up. And, mate, it's interesting, you know, I've got memories of you that if I'd mentioned a lead to you or something along those lines, as soon as I'd mentioned it to you, the volume of times that you would follow me up. Where do you believe that you get the tenacity that it takes to continue to follow up and not be afraid of somebody telling you to go away?
Honestly, I think it comes from, part of it's from a competitive background or a sports background, and I think the other part of it is not coming from a lot myself,
mm-hmm,
and not, you know, and having to work so hard for everything that I've had. I think, and knowing what my goals are, you know, knowing that, like, if I want to reach those goals, then I need to be that guy that's, like, on top of everything. So until somebody says no to me, it's free game, and that's the same with anything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, why I believe part of my success has not just been, like, the ability to prospect, but I think it's the ability to my lead follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And staying organized and disciplined, because a lot of people don't have, they may work open houses, knock on doors, cold call, whatever they do, but then whoever they meet, they forget to follow up with them before they know it, they've re-blessed it. But somebody tells me, hey, give me a call back in 2 weeks, I'll call them back in 5 days.
Yeah, no, and that's, and And that's absolutely one of the key things. Like, there's certain people within our organisation that you meet, and they always ask, everyone always asks, so what do they do differently? And, mate, one of the clear things is hard work is certainly one of your philosophies, there's no question, but there's certainly the ability of your follow-up. But not only your follow-up is your memory of when someone tells you a lead or a lead source or that there's an opportunity into the future or that they might sell or whatever it may be. Someone could say to you that, hey, I'm looking at selling in a year's time. I could guarantee that you'd probably pick up the phone and call them a week later and go, hey, look, why don't we talk about it now?
Right. No, yeah, exactly. Like you said, people always push you off, but I constantly stay in touch with people. You know, as soon as I get off the phone with someone, I'll have their email address. I'll have them in for a follow-up call. I'll have their home address, so they'll get an email from me. They'll get... I'll set them up for a follow-up call, and then in the meantime, I'll follow up and follow them another time to make sure they got the email, so I'm constantly touching them.
Yep. Yeah, no worries.
So they know at the end of it who I am.
Yeah, no, exactly right, mate. There's a certain level of tenacity there that if any of our listeners need to take anything away from something, is that having the ability to remove that thought of, oh no, someone might tell me to go away, and just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep pushing. And even if they do tell you to go away, you can also follow it through with, hey, look, all I'm doing is trying to help because I know I can. So I think that the other thing that I wanted to focus on here as well, mate, is that, you know, there's been some auctions been a very, very key pillar to what you do. However, there's been some times that, you know, you've sort of gone away from auctions and swayed back to the traditional way of selling real estate, and then you'll come back to auction a little bit more. If you would take 100% of the time that you've been doing real estate so far, I would say 70% of it has been spent really focusing on auction. Why is it that you've sort of turned away from auction then come back to it? Like sometimes you do and then sometimes you come back to it. As an agent that's out there in the field, because I can't answer that question because, you know, I'm obviously biased to the opinion of auction. If you were going to share with our listeners, you know, your thoughts around, you know, auction versus traditional, and sometimes doing something traditional, sometimes doing something auction, how do you determine that?
I think sometimes, like I said, if a property's previously been on the market before and I've pushed auction, then obviously it's auction. And if someone's tried selling it traditionally and it's a unique sale or it's a tougher sale, then there's no question, without a doubt, I'm gonna push auction. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if I know that it's a house that should sell, you know, as soon as I put a sign in the ground, you know, then, you know, I'll run it the traditional route.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes, you know, if I know the seller's kind of a, you know, a pain in the ass and they're going to give me a hard time about going auction, I'll say, well, let's go traditional, but if we're not getting the activity and the results that we want in 2 to 3 weeks, we're going to do it my way.
Yeah, great. So you go through a process of elimination with your sellers. Not only you go through a process of elimination with yourself to see if there is any low-hanging fruit out there.
Right.
Yeah, great. And that's, you know, and that's something that can be used in any philosophy in business, is that, you know, we've always said when it comes to auction is that every property is for auction, but not every person is for auction. And I think you can make that deciphering factor that some sellers need to go through that process of elimination. And you've been very good at identifying the ones, like you said, with lack of better terminology, is the ones that are the pain in the ass, okay, that you know, that are just going to use auction as an excuse why they're not seeing the marketplace. Mate, you've got a really clear belief factor in auction, and partly it's because of your success. But, you know, you had a blind loyalty to what Kevin and I told you in the very beginning of your career. And why do you think that was? Because, you know, one of the biggest catalysts to people not doing well is that they don't listen. You know, they think that they know better eventually. Like, they might listen for the first couple of months and then they think they know better eventually. You know, even now, mate, you're one of the first people that will say, no, you're right about that, or okay, yeah, no, I do need to do that better. You're still very, very. I suppose you'll take on information, or you'll want to learn a little bit more, and you don't think that ultimately you know everything. You really did grasp what we did in the beginning. Why do you think there was that blind loyalty to do what we told you to do?
I think because I just saw the success that Kevin had, and also the background that you were coming from. That kind of, you came from a background of where this was, you know, the number one way to sell real estate in the marketplace that you came from.
Mm-hmm.
And me having zero experience, I was leaning on people that I trusted.
Yep.
And I was a complete sponge because I had no bad habits coming into it. And at the same time, I didn't have the ability and the time to mess up and get things wrong, try things, and, you know, keep failing because of the position I was in. I'd given up a job,
mm-hmm.
to focus on this. I think at the time I had like $7,000 to my name, and I had, you know, Stephanie, and she got pregnant and all these other things that were going on. So just, you know, I had to make things work, and that's where, you know, and I'm so glad I did, because the way things have, you know, turned out, and there are things that I'm not, you know, if you talk to me about football, then like, hey, I'm not listening to Kevin or you because I think I know more. But when it came to real estate,
yep.
I had like, you know, the only thing I'd done is I bought an investment property myself. Apart from that, I knew nothing about the real estate market. And coming from a foreign country where real estate is done very differently to how it is in the U.S., and what I was used to, I really didn't have any, you know, any exposure or knowledge of it. So I was relying on Kevin and yourself.
The other thing, mate, and we'll probably start to round down the interview now, is that you deal in a marketplace called Dover Shores where, you know, there's one of the most dominant real estate agents in the country there, which is Tim Smith. I believe he actually lives close to Dover Shores. And, mate, at any one time, if you were to go back there before you'd have gotten into real estate, he definitely had market share. There have been times where you have had double the market share in that neighbourhood of him. There's been times where you've beaten him out on multiple listings. And don't get me wrong, mate, I remember every single one of them that you and I went on in the beginning that we beat him out. It was it was happy days there. However, you know, what gave you the confidence in the beginning because most agents will sit there and they'll make an excuse. No, I'm not experienced enough. I can't go in there. How did you get that first listing in that neighborhood where you knew you were in competition? Like, what gave you the confidence to really just ask for the business and keep going? Most agents wouldn't even bother, or if they did bother, they got knocked back once or twice. Like, just talk about the challenge that you had in your marketplace. It's one of the most highly fought marketplaces in the country, and you went in there fresh and just went, okay, let's do it.
So I think it was like, at first, I didn't even really know the neighborhood. You know, I didn't know it. I'd never been there before. So I was just like calling expires, cancels, and got on the phone with some lady who was an executive actually at a big corporation, Pimco,
yeah.
Got talking to her about auction, and she'd been on the market previously, hadn't sold, and she was kind of intrigued with the process. So as soon as I got her kind of intrigued, you know, I saw it as an opportunity. I was listing $300,000 homes in Murrieta and Temecula, and then I get a call for $1 million, get through to somebody for $1.7 million in Dover Shores,
mm-hmm.
that was open to talking. So, you know, followed up with her, then managed to set an appointment. And the first appointment I took yourself, and I still remember to the day that we walked out, and you were like, "Man, she was a ball buster."
Yeah, yeah. I remember did you take Kevin there before me? Or did you take him after?
I took Kevin there. Kevin said she was a ball buster.
Oh, that's right.
And then I took you there, and then you said that she was, you know, she was easy.
Because I do remember her implicitly. Like, it's one of those type of things where you're dealing with a professional that they are so good in their industry that they believe that they almost know everything about your industry, even though they don't. And she was difficult, but I thought that she was incredibly easy in the sense of just the personality types with you and I who were willing to please her in order to get a shot in that neighbourhood. I think that that's what resonated with her.
Right, and I think it was also the fact that I was following up with her a lot more than Tim Smith was.
Yep.
Like, confirming the appointment, and before I got the appointment, then pushing to try and meet with her, sending her more information, and so on. And obviously, Tim and the other guys weren't being as persistent as I were, and they were already kind of burnt out on the previous realtor and kind of the traditional route and the lackadaisical kind of approach they took. So they thought this was a breath of kind of fresh air. Somebody coming in, yes, they knew I was greener and newer, but they knew I was more hungry, and they knew that I, $1.7 million listing to me was a lot more than it was to everybody else.
Yeah.
And they hired me because they knew when they hired me, they were going to get me. They weren't going to get pushed off to, you know, one other assistant of one of these other big agents.
And you valued them. You valued them a lot more than what anybody else did. And I think that that's something to speak to, because, you know, in a previous podcast, mate, I did a session on where, you know, maybe you should take on some of the tougher cases in the areas where properties haven't sold or a tough seller to make sure your real estate fit. And there's no question, mate, in your first 2 to 3 years of real estate is that you were definitely probably a lot more real estate fit than anybody else in your marketplace in order to run process and deal with properties that were more difficult, because that was your specialty in the sense of taking on something that hadn't sold and really turning it around, really using that auction process, but also not to mention being willing to say yes to people that were being difficult in the beginning.
Right. No, like I said, that's exactly right. And I think just, you know, I think that along with kind of the fact that, you know, I didn't have a lot else going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was willing to work when I first started, I was doing 7 days a week. I was working all my own open houses.
Yep.
So sellers appreciated that. And just constantly being transparent with the sellers the whole time, because a lot of agents previously, the listings that I had, weren't transparent.
Yep.
And by representing auction, talking about auction, talking about transparency, disclosures, inspections, and everything like that up front, and then sellers reports and all these other things that we did, kind of really make us stand out from everybody else.
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. And I guess that, you know, the final thing that I want to sort of run through with you, mate, is that, you know, you're obviously at a place at the moment where this year you've had an exceptional year. You know, the beginning of the year probably was a little bit slower, like it was for everybody, but then you have just come home like with a wet sail, and you've got some incredible listings at the moment. You've got incredible inventory. You know, you're working your butt off, and I guess that, you know, you're going to have a tremendous year when, you know, the marketplace hasn't been as kind to a lot of other people. What are your goals for 2020, mate? You're coming into November now. The thing about you, Wes, is that you're not slowing down like 90% of the other people in the industry. Like, obviously, driving up to Big Bear, doing a listing now, you know, Thanksgiving isn't getting in the way, Christmas isn't getting in the way. Have you started planning for 2020? What do you want to achieve? What does that look like?
Honestly, I haven't done my goals yet. I'm still focused on wrapping this year up and trying to, you know, finish this year out strong.
Yep.
But next year, you know, my goal this year was to make it, you know, make $1 million. But
yep.
I think I'm going to do that.
Okay.
That'll be one of my goals next year, along with now we're building a team out, you know, I'm not working nowhere near as many open houses because I've kind of built this team and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So having more time available with family and friends and so on, because I've worked so hard to get to where I am. But I'm still going to continue to prospect on a daily basis. And, you know, I have income goals. I have personal goals. You know, I want to, you know, get back and see family more back home.
Yep. Yep. So you're gearing more your life around some personal goals, mate, because you've sort of set up an establishment that you know that you've got an incredibly good cadence with your business at the moment, that it'll certainly spur along as long as you've got the team there. But you said something that is pretty humbling in a sense, Wesley, is that, you know, somebody in your position writing $1 million almost in fees would not say that they're going to prospect every day, and I still believe that that's the fuel of the business. So that's something that I take away out of that, is that you're still going to prospect every day regardless of ultimately, you know, turning off a tiny bit more and going and spending more time with the family.
No, yeah, so nothing's going to change regards to still be in the office for the most part, prospecting 3 hours a day. Still going on as many appointments, still working Monday through Friday, just having more free time on the weekends with the family.
Yep.
Would be, you know, my goal. And, you know, like I said, I'm up in Big Bear. I was in Arrowhead last week. I'll go wherever the business is. I've never, no listing's too small for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've got a listing in Lake Elsinore for $265,000. A lot of top agents in Newport would say, hey, it's too small for me, I'm not driving there.
Yeah.
For me, you know, there's no business too small. Every deal counts. Every check cash is the same. And until I get to a place where I'm making insane amount of money just off of my sphere of influence, you know, prospecting is going to be a daily part of my routine for the distant future as far as I see it.
That's great, mate. Well, it's good to see that you understand that, because most people believe that they've done their time in real estate as hard as you've worked, and they don't want to prospect, and then in 2 years' time, their business doesn't exist anymore because they believe they become a referral agent. Now, when you become a referral agent, folks, that's bullshit, for you don't have a business, okay? So I think that, first of all, mate, I think that on behalf of Harcourts and behalf of Harcourts Auctions, we want to thank you for helping us build what we've built, because we're going to the next step as well, and not to mention it's been wonderful to watch the journey, and we're going to enjoy being part of it into the future. So folks, a big thank you to Wesley Williams for being on the podcast, and hopefully you've got a lot out of it. Thanks for your time, Wes.
No worries. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks,
take care.
Bye-bye.